Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Viewers, this is the second episode of the 20th topic. We have been discussing the transmission of the Quran, and in the first episode I had pointed out how the final recital of the Quran was called by our earliest scholars as the Al-Qira'atul Amma. The Almighty had directed the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam to read the Quran according to this final recital in its new arrangement and communicate it to his companions. And today we will discuss how these companions transferred the Quran they received from the Prophet to the next generation and how this process has been going on ever since. Now, this primarily is a discussion which revolves around historical sources and historical methods in which things are transferred or texts are transferred or facts are transferred, and primarily relates to the realm of history. As far as the Quran is concerned, we have to realize the fact that the Quran was actually transmitted through consensus, which of course means ijma, and the perpetual concurrence or tawatur of the companions. They transferred the Quran to the next generation through their ijma and their tawatur, and ever since then this process has been continuing. Now, it needs to be understood that these two modes of transmission, ijma or consensus, tawatur or perpetual concurrence, they yield certitude and faithful transmission of whatever is transmitted. So therefore, these two modes of transmission tell us that what has been transmitted is certain to be correct, and there has been no adulteration in this process. Now, as far as ijma is concerned, this means that each and every companion vouched for the fact that whatever is being transmitted is the Quran, and actually there was no difference of opinion in this regard. So there was no difference in opinion in this regard, and none of them differed in the transmitted text of the Quran. Since then, this consensus has existed from the times of the companions, and it is continuing to exist in all periods after them and until today. So we find that there is a consensus regarding the text of the Quran by this ummah. Now, our past scholars copiously refer to this particular attribute or feature of the Quran, in which we say that whatever has been transmitted to us, there is a consensus from the very first generation, which of course is the Sahaba, who through their own consensus or ijma transferred the Quran to the next generation. Thus we find scholars like As-Sarakhsi. He says that he, while referring to the Quran, says "Tafaqu alay," on which the companions agreed upon. This is what he has stated in his Usul. So Usul As-Sarakhsi actually tells us that the nature of the Quranic text was "Tafaqu alayhi," what the companions agreed upon. And then we have Ghazali, who in his Al-Mustasfa min Ilm al-Usul, pointing out the fact that the Quran was al-muttafaq alayhi, which means agreed upon by all. Similarly, we have Saifuddin al-Amidi in his Al-Ihkam fi Usul al-Ahkam, saying that about the Quran, ajma'at al-ummah, the words that he uses, ajma'at al-ummah, which means there is the consensus of the ummah. The ummah was united on what the Quran was or is. Similarly, viewers, Az-Zarkashi and Al-Mardawi, while referring to this status of the Quran, that it was agreed upon, says ajma'u al-sahaba, which means all the companions agreed on it. Of course, this means that there was no difference of opinion. When we report a positive agreement on the text of the Quran, that this, in other words, means that no one differed. There was no difference reported in this text of the Quran. Zarkashi has recorded this opinion in his famous book on fiqh, Al-Bahr al-Mufid fi Usul al-Fiqh, his book on Usul al-Fiqh. And Al-Mardawi, who has also cited similar words as Ajma'u al-Sahaba, he has actually cited his book At-Tahbir Shara At-Tahrif Yusul al-Fiqh. Now, while referring to the generation followed by the companions, Shatibi writes, يَتَوَافَقُ الْجَمِيعَ عَلَى شَيْءٍ وَاحِدٍ وَلَا يَقَعُ فِي الْقُرْآنِ اِخْتِلَافٌ مِنْ أَحَدٍ مِنَ النَّاسِ. all agreed on one thing, and there was no difference regarding the Quran by anyone. So Shatibi has actually posited this in his Al-Muwafaqat fi Usul al-Fiqh. So you can see, viewers, that as far as the text of the Quran is concerned, it has this status that it is mujma alay, as I would say, it was agreed upon by all the Sahaba, and ever since then, this ijma, this consensus, exists on the text of the Quran, and it existed in all the periods in between as well. Now let me come to the second mode of transmission, which I just referred to, and that is actually tawatur, and can best be translated by perpetual concurrence. And this means that such a large number of people transmit something that their collusion on any falsehood is ruled out. So in other words, it refers to the multiplicity of sources, and such a large number of sources report the same content from their senses that any collusion, any connivance on falsehood is absolutely ruled out. And now this again also yields certitude the way I have just described. So everyone agrees that as far as tawatur is concerned, it yields certitude and jazm, as our Suliyin would say. Now all our authorities, all our past scholars actually agree to the fact that this certitude is obtained through tawatur. So tawatur is a means through which certitude is obtained, and I'm just going to refer to some of the authorities in this regard who have pointed out this fact. Thus, for example, Al-Jurjani says, أَمَّا الْخَبْرُ الْمُتَوَاتِرُ فَهُوَ كَلَامٌ يَسْمَعُهُ مِنْ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ جَمَاعَةً وَمِنْهَا جَمَاعَةٌ أُخْرَى إِلَىٰ أَنْ يَنْتَهِيَ إِلَىٰ الْمُتَمَسِّكِ. So Ali ibn Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jurjani in his At-Ta'rifat has referred to this definition of tawatur or perpetual concurrence. So as far as mutawatir khabar is concerned, it is the kalam heard by a whole group from the Messenger of God, and from this group another group has heard it until it reaches the person who acquires it. So it's like a generation to generation transfer, group to group transfer. Now let me also read out what Imam Suyuti has written. He says, Al-Mutawatir kullu khabrin balagat ruwatuhu fil kasra mablagan aw ahalat al-ada tawatuhum al-kizb. Which means, Al-Mutawatir is that khabr whose narrators reach a large number or to such a number that it is impossible for them to collude on falsehood. And this he has actually cited in his Murjum Maqalidul Uloom. And then Muhammad ibn Ali ibn al-Qadhi, Muhammad Hamid ibn Muhammad Sabir al-Faruqi al-Hanafi al-Thanvi, a very famous scholar, contemporaneous to Shah Waliullah, in his Masuwa Kashaf Istilahat al-Funun wal-Ulum, has also defined al-Mutawatir or Mutawatir as al-Mutawatir khabrun balagat ruwatuhu mablagan ahalat al-ada tawafukuhum al-kizb. Al-Mutawatir is that khabar whose narrators reach such a number that it is impossible for them to collude on falsehood. Similarly, viewer, if I cite Al-Manavi, and his words are, Al-Mutawatir khabru jam'in la yutasavvaru adatan tawatuhum al-kizb an-mahsus. So Mutawatir is a report of something palpable by a group about which it is impossible to regard it colluding on falsehood. So palpable, or something which can be felt by the senses. And then we have Ad-Dabusi. And as far as Dabusi is concerned, he, in his At-Tawqif ala Muhimmat At-Ta'rif, he says, Kitabullah ma nukhila ilayna. Now, before I move on to what Dabusi has written, I want to summarize the fact that as far as the definition of tawatur is concerned, which I have just presented before you, through various authorities, the way they define the tawatur, it yields certain knowledge, and it means that whatever has been transmitted, the nature of transmission is such that there can be no possibility of any adulteration creeping into it. So this is as far as tawatur or perpetual concurrence is concerned. We had just discussed earlier on ijma or consensus. The word ijma or consensus here, I must point this out, does not refer to any ijma or consensus on the interpretation of a certain directive, because the word ijma is generally used in our religious connotation to imply the fact that people are gathered on the interpretation of a certain directive of the Almighty. Here, the word ijma is not being used in this sense. This is an entirely different connotation. And the one which is closest to this would be al-muttafaq alayh, something which is agreed upon. So the first mode that I had discussed was that the Quran is an agreed upon text. It is an agreed upon text. So ijma is basically, or consensus is on the text of the Quran, and this has existed in every period of time. And then we have been discussing what perpetual concurrence or tawatur is. And perpetual concurrence on tawatur means that such a large number of people transmit something that whatever they transmit is rendered faithful and rendered true to whatever it is without any amalgamation or without any interpolation. And this is what perpetual concurrence is. And both these modes of transmission yield certainty and certitude. And this is what the Quran actually possesses. And as I move along, I will also explain how some of the questions which might arise on the nature of this transmission, I would try to explain them as well. So for the moment, I will now turn again to Ad-Dabusi and how some of our scholars, they posit the fact, and they are absolutely agreed on the fact, that the Quran that we have today is mutawatir. So first we have the definition of tawatur, or perpetual concurrence, which means that a mode of transmission which reveals certain knowledge. And then we have this claim or this statement given by our scholars that all that the Quran is mutawatir. And let me also point out how they explain this. So Ad-Dabusi says, كتاب الله تعالى ما نقل إلينا بين الدفة المصاحف على الأحرف السبع المشهورة نقلا متواترا. Which means the book of God Almighty, he is actually defining it, or the Haddul Kitab, it's like defining what the book of God is. He says, what has been transmitted to us between two covers of the Masahif according to the well-known seven Ahruf through Tawatur. And Abu Zayd al-Dabusi in his Taqweem al-Adilla fi Usul al-Fiqh has actually pointed this out. And I have already, purport of giving this definition here is how our scholars point to the fact that the Quran is a Naql Mutawatir. The fact that it is according to the seven well-known Ahruf, seven Ahruf, I have already, this is not my corroboration to this definition. What I just wanted to point out is that Naql Mutawatir is something which is why I need to point out. As far as Ahruf al-Sab'a are concerned, I've already discussed them in my earlier talks and tried to point out the fact that the narrative on Ahruf al-Sab'a is not only weak in its text, it has a number of questions that arise on its interpretation, but also on its chain of narration. So I'm not corroborating the Ahruf al-Sab'a part. What I'm saying is that the way our scholars describe or define the Book of God, they always include the fact that it is a book that has been transmitted to us through tawatur. Now, in the words of Saraqsi, and he again once again in his Usul says, "Ilm bi anna al-kitab huwa al-Qur'an al-munazzal ala Rasulillah sallallahu alayhi wasallam al-maktub fi daffat al-masahif al-manqul ilayna ala al-ahruf al-sab'a al-mashhura naqlan mutawatiran." So is almost the same words. Know that the book is the Quran, which has been revealed to God's messenger, that is written in the Masahih between covers, transmitted to us on the famous or well-known seven Ahruf. So again, here point that I would like to make is that this Naql Mutawatir or Naqlan Mutawatir, and that has been pointed out. Again, the words As-Sab'a al-Mashura, As-Sab'at al-Ahruf, al-Ahruf al-Sab'a al-Mashura is something which is, of course, the part that is an additional part to what the definition of the Quran is, but the transmission part is actually referred to by the words Naqlan Mutawatiran. And we have Al-Bazdawi in his Usul al-Bazdawi saying, فَالْقُرْآنَ al-munazzal عَلَى رَسُولِ اللَّهِ الْمَكْتُوبِ فِي الْمَسَّاحِفِ الْمَنْقُولَ عَلِ النَّبِيِّ صلى الله عليه وسلم نَقْلًا مُتَوَاتِرًا. So thus the Quran has been revealed to God's messenger, that is written in the Masahif and transmitted from him in a mutawatir manner. And now to quote Ghazali, he says, وَحَدُّ الْكِتَابِ مَا نُقِلَ عَلَيْنَا بَيْنَ دَفَّةِ الْمُصْحَفِ عَلَى الْأَحْرَفِ السَّبْعَ الْمَشْهُورَةِ نَقْلًا مُتَوَاتِرًا. And he actually, in his Al-Mustasfa min Ilm al-Usul, has actually written this definition. He says, the definition of the book is that which has been transmitted to us in a mutawatir way, what is found in between the two covers of the Mus'haf, according to the well-known seven Ahruf. So you can see clearly the words Naqlan Mutawatiran being repeated once again here. Ash-Shawqani now, in his Irshad al-Fuhul, he says, وَأَمَّا حَدُّ الْكِتَابِ إِسْتَلَاهًا فَهُوَ الْكَلَامُ الْمُنَزِّلُ عَلَىٰ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ الْمَكْتُوبِ فِي الْمَصَاحِفِ الْمَنْقُولِ إِلَيْنَا نَقْلًا مُتَوَاتِرًا. So as far as the technical definition of the book is concerned, it is the kalam, or the discourse that has been revealed to the messenger of God, to the messenger which is written in the Masaif and transmitted to us in a mutawatir way. So viewers, you can see that this is something which all our scholars describe, that as far as the Quran is concerned, the text of the Quran is concerned, it possesses this tawatur, and there is no difference of opinion as far as this fact is concerned. Now, viewers, in fact, this transmission was actually made possible because right in the time of the Prophet, when he was departing this world at his demise, there were such a large number of companions who were responsible for transmitting the Quran that the very first step in this transmission was the one in which this tawatur started. So had there been a few companions, like, for example, the Prophet Jesus left very few companions, we could have posited the fact that this tawatur could not have been even initiated. But the first thing that was historically achieved was that such a large number of the Sahaba actually existed at the time of the Prophet's demise, that the first rung or the first step of tawatur began with them. And of course, this is the supreme requirement of tawatur as well. And viewers, in this regard, I'd like to also point out that whenever we transmit something through tawatur, of course, it has to be through the senses, something which is palpable, as we have already seen. It cannot be something which relates to any interpretation, because interpretation would mean that one's own intellect has interfered in the transmission. So whatever is transmitted has to be something which purely relies on the senses. It could be on the oral senses or on the visual senses, but it has to be directly on the senses. So as far as this point that I was just discussing is concerned, that what was achieved at the demise of the Prophet was that a large number of the companions were actually present. And according to Abu Zura Razi, one of the earliest historians of Islam, he says that this number stood at 1,14,000. So this is a number that he has given. Obviously, it has to be an approximation, and this has been recorded by Khatib Baghdadi in his Al-Jami al-Akhlaq al-Rabi wa Adab al-Sami. And in the opinion of Imam Shafi'i, as recorded by Ibn Kasir in his Al-Bidayat al-Nihaya, he says that those who heard and saw the Prophet, they were approximately 60,000 in number. So we can clearly see that in the first generation, the first step, such a large number of people transmitted the Quran from the Prophet. We will presently discuss this mode of the way it was transmitted and how this went on. But for the moment, we are just discussing the definitions and also seeing how, in the very first step, this tawatur was achieved. For also, viewers, of something of importance to note is that not only was the number of Sahaba such that this tawatur was achieved in the first step, but also one thing that supplemented this was that an empire of the Muslims was formed right at the demise of the Prophet. So a big empire of Muslims had come into being, and this actually augmented as time went on. And it can be argued that right up till 1924, when the Ottoman Turks dismembered the Khilafah, we find that the Turkish Caliphate, till its abandonment, this empire existed in some form or the other. So although it was divided later on, but the initial period was the one which was kept intact. And to supplement the large number of companions, this empire was standing at their back, and all efforts of transmission of the Quran also received great impetus at the hands of these initial rulers as well. So this is as far as the definitions and some of the statements of our previous scholars are concerned. Of course, there might seem to be a claim, but now let us examine in history how this could have happened. And now I'm going to describe some of the important issues in this regard that might have arisen as questions in our mind and which might help in solving some of these questions. So the first point of view that I would like to take up is that let us discuss the nature of this mutawatir transmission of the Quran, because as far as ijma is concerned, this is something that we might take up as an example later on. But as far as the this nature of this transmission is concerned, let us first take this up. Now, viewers, we need to understand that mutawatir transmission is of two types. One is khabar mutawatir and the other is naql mutawatir. So as far as khabar mutawatir is concerned, it is just a degree less than ijma, and it is basically the transmission of a past event. It is a narration of the past event. It is a transmission of how a past event took place. But naql mutawatir is something in which the entity itself is transmitted in a mutawatir way. So khabar mutawatir would be a khabar, or a piece of news, or a piece of information of an event that happened in the past but was transferred in a mutawatir manner, the way it took place, the way that event took place. On the other hand, the Quran is not a khabar mutawatir. It is not an event of the past. It is naql mutawatir, which means that a large people actually transmitted the Quran. And since this transmission is taking place in a mutawatir way, so we call it naql mutawatir. Now, as far as khabar mutawatir is concerned, as I said, it must not be confused with the naql mutawatir, because we have earlier seen the definitions which our scholars have given of the tawatur basically involves the word khabar. But if we just subtract the word khabar, the essential part is the definition that I had given earlier on was actually meant to tell what tawatur itself is. Now, tawatur itself, as I said, must be divided into khabar mutawatir and naql mutawatir. And khabar mutawatir, as I said, is just a degree less than ijma. And it's like telling us that a number of people who are in a very large quantity, in a very large number, transmitted the information of certain past events. So just to give you an example of khabar mutawatir, we see that Plato, for example, was a philosopher who lived in Greece, and that Genghis Khan ravaged Baghdad, and that Napoleon was defeated at Waterloo by Arthur Wellesley, the Duke of Wellington. These reports of the past have been transmitted from generations that saw and witnessed these events. And so that, and such was the extent that no one can challenge the veracity of these reports. Similarly, if I would like to give you examples of texts who have been ascribed to their authors, for example, the Shahnama of Ferdowsi, the Canterbury Tales of Geoffrey Chaucer, the Divine Comedy of Dante, they are perpetually concurrent reports which ascribe them to their respective owners, and this became a right at the time when these books were written or published and is continuing ever since. So these are examples of khabar mutawatir, in which we find things of the past being attributed to certain people, but their news is traveling through various people. So it's basically a khabar, it's basically a news which is traveling from the past. But as I said, the Quran, on the contrary, must not be confused with the khabar mutawatir. It's not a khabar, it's naql, it's transmission itself. It is being transmitted. It's a phenomenon in which the transmission is still going on. Now, as far as the nature of this transmission is concerned, viewer, I would say that it is verbal in its primary essence, or it is basically the oral tradition through which the Quran was transferred. And this we can be even more exact, then we can say it was verbatim, the way it was heard and then transmitted orally, and then heard and then transmitted and then committed to memory. So these are the ways in which the Quran was transmitted through naql mutawatir. So the mode of this naql mutawatir was verbatim. The transmission primarily was verbal. It was verbal. And It can be illustrated perhaps in the form of a wire mesh in which each row is linked and enmeshed into the subsequent one, thereby replicating itself in layers and layers of repetitive originals. You can see this illustration being shown before you. So it's like repetitive layers of originals being replicated at each step, yielding certitude, and therefore we can clearly see that as far as the Quran is concerned, the Qiraatul Amma of the Quran was actually transmitted to oral tawatur, or oral perpetual concurrence in every generation. And thus we have this question that it was basically a memorized text which was transmitted to the next generations. And Ibn al-Jazari has actually very aptly explained this when he says, إِنَّ الْعِتَمَادْ فِي نَقْلِ الْقُرْآنِ عَلَىٰ حِفْزِ الْقُلُوبِ وَالصُّدُورِ لَا عَلَىٰ حِفْزِ الْمَصَاحِفِ الْكُتُبِ. In his An-Nashr fil Qiraat al-Nashri, he says, indeed, the reliance on the transmission of the Quran was on what was preserved in the hearts and not what was preserved in the codices and written copies. So he's telling us that the primary dependence in the transmission of the Quran was preserved in the hearts. So it may, and yours, this is not something that we might be able to gauge in a precise manner, because today we are living in a culture in which orality is not that rampant. We are living in a culture in which the dependency on the written word has become so all-pervasive that it has become absolutely difficult for us to imagine how an oral culture would be, in which things are memorized, in which things are recited by heart and then read out by heart and then narrated by heart. This was the culture of the Arabs in the times of the Prophet and much after him as well. And also many other parts of the world. So as far as this is concerned, we can see their poetic compositions, the way they would recite their own genealogies. It's all dependent on this oral culture. And for this, we need to understand how the Arabian milieu in that time was. And if anyone has any doubts regarding how texts were memorized without the aid of the written word, he can just take a look at the tradition of blind memorizers amongst Muslims. Blind memorizers. So they would learn the Quran merely by hearing it, merely by listening to it. So this should not be a very cause of concern, or something which actually might alarm us, that how could people learn the Quran if they don't have it written with them. So this tradition of blind memorizers is sufficient to open our eyes and tell us how it was made possible, and it is still made possible even today. This tradition is going on. Now, though the companions had copies of the Quran written as well, but as far as the tawatur of the written text is concerned, we can only claim that its consonantal or the skeletal text has this perpetual concurrence, because it was written during the time it was revealed as well. However, it cannot be claimed for its complete text, because the vowels or the diacritical marks in their complete sense were inserted much later on. So what we can say is that as far as the skeletal text of the Quran is concerned, it also possesses the same tawatur as the oral tradition. But since the oral tawatur was employed in writing down these diacritics and in inserting vowel sounds, so therefore this oral tawatur possesses a degree of preference and superiority over this written tawatur. And as far as written tawatur is concerned, it can only be claimed vis-a-vis the skeletal text of the Quran. And earlier on, it only played a role a supportive role in so that the text is there and a person could recite it from his memory. So as far as the written text are concerned, I would say they are totally dependent on the oral text. And once these signs were inserted, once the vowel signs and once the diacritics had been completely inserted, we can see that they from that point onwards, they went hand in hand. But even today, viewers, the primary role and the primary importance that we have is that of the oral transmission, or the oral tawatur, and our written tawatur is actually subservient to it. And viewers, such is the all-pervasive nature of this oral tawatur that I have already described some of the scribal errors which are present in the Quran in the previous topic. that they were not even needed to be corrected. Not even needed to be corrected, because such was the all-pervasiveness of the oral tawatur that it was sufficient that in the presence of that oral tawatur, these scribal errors, which were basically additions of vowels like alif, wa, and ya, wrongly inserted at certain places, that the oral tradition was so strong that Muslims never bothered to correct them, because they knew that they would be correctly read in spite of being written in a wrong manner. And viewers, now that we are discussing this mode of tawatur and the nature of this tawatur transmission or the perpetual concurrence, I would also like to mention the fact that the way in which this tawatur has been achieved for the Quran is by its constituents. So in the generation of the companions, we had people who would have perhaps memorized one surah or two surahs or one set of surahs. Another set of companions had memorized another set of surahs. So the cumulative effect was such that the complete text of the Quran possessed tawatur. So what is being claimed is not that the whole of the Quran had been memorized by people in the first generation of the Sahaba to such an extent that particular number reached tawatur. That would be a wrong conclusion or a wrong claim. What is being said is that the Quran possesses tawatur in its individual constituents, in its surahs. So if we have, for example, a whole set of surahs, maybe one or two, being memorized by so many sahaba that particular number reached the tawatur. And similarly, another group of surahs, maybe one or two, maybe five, maybe six, being memorized by some other sahaba, and that particular number again reaching tawatur. So it's like achieving tawatur from the constituents to the whole. And in this way, this tawatur was achieved and should be understood. This was the first question, viewers, which I would like to have addressed. That is, what is exactly the nature of this tawatur? I would just summarize it. This tawatur actually is should not be confused by khabar mutawatir, because khabar is the transmission of an information of a past event, whereas nakal mutawatir, which is what the Quran is actually the transmission of the content itself. So the Quran is nakal mutawatir, and the nature of this nakal is verbal, and it needs to be understood that this has held preference amongst Muslims. The second question, viewers, is something that is actually, or a second point that I would like to make here, is how we can actually explain ijma and tawatur, or perpetual concurrence, in normal historical terms, and other as vis-a-vis other examples. So in this regard, the first thing that I would like to point out is that ijma and tawatur, they are not religious terms themselves. They are not religious terms. They are terms of history, in fact. They belong to the realm of history. They belong to the realm of historicity and historiography, in which we are able to gauge how facts are transmitted through established means. So ijma and tawatur, as I have just pointed out, they are actually basically modes of transmission in which established historical content is transmitted. We have isolated reports, like, for example, Akhbar Ahad. They don't give us certitude, they don't yield certain knowledge. They are transmitted by a few individuals. But as far as ijma and tawatur is concerned, they have to be understood as terms of history. They are not religious terms. And once again, let me also point out, when I am saying ijma, what I am saying here, or what I am implying here, is not the ijma on the interpretation of certain directives of Islam, as this has been the general case in which the word ijma is used. Here, the word ijma is being used in the sense that there was a consensus, ittifaq, I would say, on the text of the Quran. So as far as this thing is concerned, this is nothing special with the Quran when we use these terms. Other established historical facts also have been transmitted through ijma and through verbal concurrence, perpetual verbal concurrence. So just to give some examples in this regard, so that we can see how these modes of transmission must be understood as historical terms and not as religious terms. So when we say that Jesus was a person who existed in a certain period of time, almost two millenniums ago, and he claimed to be a prophet of God, this is something which has the consensus. People in every period of time, there has been no worthy difference of opinion in this regard. No worthwhile people have at times challenged this fact because of certain reasons, but this challenge has been rendered as baseless. So there's no one who has, no one can deny the fact that there was a person called Jesus who lived, or the fact that George Washington, for example, founded the United States of America, or the fact that in our own subcontinent, Muhammad Ali Jinnah was the founder of Pakistan. So all these are historically established facts which have been transmitted by the very first generation which saw them take place. And ever since then, they have been transmitted in this way of consensus. So there is a consensus on these events, and the way they have been transmitted to us also has a consensus. So this is an example of explaining the fact that these terms are not religious terms. Ijma or consensus is a term which, side by side, has historical importance, has an historical origin primarily. Now, to give an example of nakal mutawatir, I have just made this clear, or tried to make it clear, that the Quran is nakal mutawatir. So in order to understand what this nakal mutawatir is, a very close example in this regard, viewers, is how languages are transmitted, or their individual components, like, for example, idioms, proverbs, their words and their meanings. A very, very large content of a language is transmitted through this verbal tawatur, or through this verbal perpetual concurrence. It is only much later that lexicons and dictionaries have recorded these words. It's just a record. It's just a record of what has been transmitted very all pervasively. So you can clearly see that in the case of a language, there is a slight difference which needs explanation, because as far as the language is concerned, the starting point, of course, cannot be pinpointed when this started. Whereas in the case of the Quran, the starting point can be pinpointed. But other than that, this similarity is very, very close. That just as language in the language, words have been transmitted, phrases have been transmitted, idioms have been transmitted in a very similar manner, the Quran has been transmitted. This orality in which words and language, when I speak a language, primarily my language prowess and the way I would speak it is how I heard it from my contemporaries. And there are so many ways in which I had learned this language. In a similar way, I'm absolutely certain that when I'm speaking of a certain word or a sentence, the meaning of that word, which has been written in a dictionary, is actually something which was recorded much later on, but it existed since the earliest times when it was coined and then transferred. So a very close example of how the Quran, of what nakal mutawatir is, what verbal perpetual concurrences can be seen in how words and phrases and idioms and expressions of a language are transmitted. Viewers, this is the second point that I wanted to clarify, that we must understand that ijma and perpetual concurrence or tawatur, they are not religious terms in their origin. They are primarily terms which describe the transmission of established history. Now, the third question, or the third point that viewers I'd like to point out here, is the relationship of mutawatir transmission with manuscript study. Now, if the primary mode of the transmission of the Quran is verbal tawatur, as I've just tried to plead a case for it, it follows that the study of the earliest Quran manuscripts has academic importance only. It just has an academic importance because it does not have any role in determining the text of the Quran. We know that our very worthy Western scholars are occupied in this research and a lot of depth in manuscript studies. They have done a lot of work in this regard, and it's very commendable as well. But unfortunately, it cannot be used to determine the original text of the Quran because, as I just tried to describe, the original text is dependent on this oral transmission. And if we find ancient manuscripts, if we study those ancient manuscripts, of course it will give us this benefit of finding out how the script of the Quran developed. And in this regard, I have also made my humble contribution in one of my earlier talks, in which I have critically viewed how the insertion of vowel signs and diacritic marks has been wrongly described by Muslim sources and how this actually took place and how empirical evidence actually corroborated, but that is another matter. That's more of an academic discussion. As far as the fact is concerned, that written manuscript study itself, then, as I said, it has this academic importance, but it cannot play a role in determining the text of the Quran. As far as the text of the Quran itself is concerned, viewers, it is something which has which is entirely dependent on this oral transmission. So in this regard, viewers, I will also try to explain this fact that as far as the claim is concerned that we do have certain Usmanic masahif written, although we will take it up later on as well. But again, this claim is something which has been questioned very, very convincingly that these Usmanic masahif are still present. But as far as this discussion is concerned, viewers, that the manuscript study, as far as concerned, we would encourage manuscript study. We would, of course, have a deep look at it because it describes how the script of the Quran developed and how it must have gone through various developments, but it cannot have any role in the determination of the text of the Quran, which is primarily orally transferred. The fourth point, Gil, that I'd like to discuss is the nexus between mutawatir transmission and ijma. And this is viewers. This is the reason that I wanted to discuss is that I would say that every member of the Muslim community has played and is playing its role in the transmission of the Quran in some way or the other, and has thereby contributed to the ijma and tawatur. This is something that I'd like to explain, that every member of the Muslim community, even though he might not be a full memorizer of the Quran, we know that there are people who are full memorizers of the Quran, called the Huffaz or the Qurra, who are the repositories of the complete text of the Quran. And there are others also who have partially memorized the Quran, but they are Muslims who might be knowing very few surahs of the Quran. Even they play their role in determining the text of the Quran or in vouching for the text of the Quran, because they, even if they do not learn or the whole of the Quran by heart, they vouch that whatever is being transmitted by the memorizers or written in various texts today or by partial memorizers constitutes the Quran. And it is this phenomenon of yours that needs to be understood. Obviously, the whole of the Muslim community, they are not memorizers, whether full or partial, but even non-memorizers tacitly approve and attest the Quran being transmitted, that is being transmitted by the memorizers, as the one that is that was revealed to the Prophet ever since the first generation, and they hence play their role in the transmission of the text. So in other words, I would say this perpetual concurrence or tawatur transmission and ijma, they go hand in hand. As far as the perpetual transference is concerned, this transfer is done by certain individuals which actually reach tawatur through their constituents, through the components of the Quran which I just described. And then we have a larger Muslim community which might not be even partial or complete memorizers of the Quran, but all of them vouch for the fact that whatever is being transmitted by these complete or partial memorizers is the very Quran. So this is a nexus, I would say, between ijma and concurrent transmission or tawatur. And if this is true, then we can see that how these two modes of transmission complement and supplement each other and go hand in hand. And finally, viewers, I would also would like to make a fifth point in this regard, and that relates to how, in certain instances of time, there was state interference in the transmission of the Quran. It has been argued and discussed earlier on that ever since the time of the Prophet, the process of dissemination of the Quran has been continuing, and because of the presence of a caliphate or a Muslim empire right at the time of when the Prophet departed. So that gave a great impetus to the transfer and dissemination of the Quran, and this was done officially as well. However, viewers, there are perhaps only two instances which took place in the earliest caliphates, one in the caliphate of the Rashidun and the other in the Umayyads, when a state perhaps interfered earlier on to make certain things which had gone wrong, they had to set right those things, and it actually interfered to root out spurious messiah of the Quran. And the first of this took place in the times of the Caliph Usman, which I've already discussed in some of my previous talks, that how he actually eliminated some spurious messiah, which perhaps reflected the reading of the chronological Quran or had some wrong arrangement, and similarly could have some spurious verses. And he set right and then sent various copies to some parts of the empire and also disseminated the text of the Quran. So this is actually his interference, the state interference in setting right a problem that had arisen in vis-a-vis some spurious messiah of the Quran. And a second instance of this can be seen in the times of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, who himself, as we know, actually in his times, as has been recorded by various authorities, thus, for example, Ibn Qutaybah has said that he undertook a massive campaign in his times when he was the caliph, when he was the governor of Iraq, to root out many spurious masahif. And he, in fact, constituted a committee of people who would confiscate these spurious masahif and even pay a compensation to the person who possessed them. But once after these two interferences, we do not find any intervention at the state level. And viewers, as I was just describing earlier on, that although it has been claimed that that there are certain Usmanic messiah which are extant, but it is convincingly shown by many authorities. In particular, if I could cite Salahuddin al-Munajjid in his Dirasat fi Tarikh al-Khatt al-Arabi منذ بدايته إلى نهاية الأسر الأموي, he has shown that this claim that there are Usmanic messiah still extant to be an absolute false claim. There are no such extant messiah, and those about whom this claim is made are much later copies. So as far as the state interference is concerned, nothing of importance regarding such interference perhaps took place at such a big level, except when we find that in 1924, when the Royal Cairo edition was prepared, and we find that never was the Qiraatul Amma, as I have said, needed to be forcibly imposed at the expense of any other reading in all these centuries. It was only in these two instances when it required some interference from the state level. So, viewers, this is an overview of how the Quran was transmitted. It is an overview of how various components and various parts of the Quran that have reached us, they actually, in their own capacity, the way they have been transmitted, their cumulative effect tell us how the Quran was transmitted in its tawatur mode. And we have seen how the transmission of the Quran primarily yields certitude, because the two modes of transmission of the Quran, ijma or consensus and perpetual concurrence or tawatur, and of course here we refer to verbal tawatur, they give us this picture about the Quran, that what was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was faithfully preserved and transmitted over the centuries to the next generations until it has reached us. Now, viewers, what I have just posited here, what I have just described, of course, might raise a number of questions regarding this transmission, especially in the wake of certain other recensions which are found in the Muslim Ummah in certain other parts of the world, and also vis-a-vis the fact that we have a wide expanse of variant readings of the Quran found in our hadith, tafsir, and fiqh books, and even our scholars adduce from these variant readings of the Quran. So there are these questions which might arise in our minds, and I shall leave this discussion to the next episodes, in which I will take up some of these questions and try to answer them to the best of my capacity. Until then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.